From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. It's been a year since the U.S. Justice Department found the Baltimore Police Department was failing to fully investigate citizen complaints of police misconduct, and that the civilian process for looking into complaints was hamstrung by too few resources and too little cooperation from police. Now things are working better, says the head of the city's Office of Civil Rights, Jill Carter. But she and Bridal Pearson, civilian chair who represents the Northern District, say more changes are needed. For example, when the board seeks to recommend a disciplinary action.
We can't really make an accurate decision in some ways because we don't have access to police files. We don't have access to know if this is their first offense, second offense, or third offense.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. A year ago, the U.S. Department of Justice issued a scathing report on the Baltimore Police Department. The report detailed illegal stops and arrests, excessive force, and public strip searches, and said predominantly African-American neighborhoods had been targeted. In addition, the Justice Department found that police failed to internally document, investigate, or adjudicate allegations of misconduct, and that the city's form of outside oversight, the Civilian Review Board, was severely hampered by a lack of both resources and cooperation from the department. The Civilian Review Board was established in 1999. It provides a check on police misconduct by appointing citizen representatives to probe complaints from the public. The board's authority extends to allegations of excessive force, abusive language, harassment, false arrest, and false imprisonment. Joining me is Jill Carter, director of Baltimore City's Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement, which oversees the Civilian Review Board. She previously served 14 years in the Maryland General Assembly, representing Baltimore's 41st District in the House from 2003 until January. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Also with us is Dr. Bridal Pearson, program director and senior lecturer in the graduate program in Human Services Administration at the University of Baltimore. Dr. Pearson represents the Northern District and is chair of the Civilian Review Board. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
What is the difference between an Internal Affairs Division investigation of the police force and a Civilian Review Board investigation?
So the internal affairs investigation, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's internal. They basically are there charged with investigation of all allegations of police misconduct. We, on the other hand, the Civilian Review Board, are ostensibly that independent review agency or independent review engine that has the ability to, we should have the ability to fully investigate on par with the internal investigation divisions and render decisions based on those findings.
But in terms of the investigation itself, do you have the same staffing? Do you have the same powers?
Oh, my goodness, no. There's a great disparity between what the staffing and resources of the Internal Affairs Division within the police department has and what the Civilian Review Board has. For example, the Civilian Review Board, the board itself consists of 9 members representing 9 different police districts within Baltimore City. But the staff for the Civilian Review Board consists of currently 2 full-time investigators, 1 investigative supervisor, 1 intern, and a special administrative assistant, and 1 part-timer. So that's the full staff currently for the Civilian Review Board. So there is no parity in resources, but we also are limited in scope. So the board does not investigate every allegation of misconduct, only those 5 categories that you spoke about.
Let me mention those again. Excessive force, abusive language, harassment, false arrest, false imprisonment. Those are the types of complaints that the Civilian Review Board reviews.
I think I just want to clarify. So because the Civilian Review Board is restricted to those 5 categories, if something falls outside of those categories, even if someone wishes to file a complaint with us, currently under law, the board has no authority to investigate those kinds of cases. And one at the lower level of the spectrum would be discourtesy complaints. So a lot of people have complaints that officers act rudely or offensively to them. But technically, our statute covers abusive language. It does not cover the broader category of discourtesy or rudeness or offensiveness or impolite officers. So that's one area that I would say that, you know, to make a distinction between what we have the authority to investigate and what IAD has the authority to investigate and then render a decision about.
I would imagine there are sometimes, though, discussions about whether something has crossed the line from discourtesy
We believe that the board is on the cusp of change in light of the consent decree that you described and the fact that the consent decree has called for a civilian oversight task force to examine the current structure of the board and to make recommendations for how we need to broaden our authority in order to be more effective. Because one of the issues is, of course, the Internal Affairs Division has the complete discretion to determine whether or not such a complaint falls into one of our categories or not. And so we believe that we should be there at the same place in the beginning, having that same discretion to make the decision as to whether or not a complaint should fall under Civilian Review Board or not.
So if the police department's Internal Affairs Division says that wasn't abusive language, that was just maybe discourteous, that precludes you from looking into it?
It would. So the board receives complaints from two different sources. Either the individual walks in off of the street and files the complaint or files it online initially, or it is transferred to us from the Internal Affairs Division, Internal Affairs Office. So if it originates with Internal Affairs, they, of course, then would have the discretion to say, well, this doesn't fall into the category. We're not sending it over to CRB. But if the person comes in off of the street, we, of course, then would have the discretion to make that determination. At the present time, because of the board's history, lack of resources, and the public perception of its lack of effectiveness, we get majority of our cases come from IAD and not from individual complainants.
I want to pursue that in a bit, but let me pull Dr. Pearson into the conversation. Bridal Pearson, can you give me an example or two of the types of situations that we're talking about, the types of situations people describe in their complaints?
A number of them are excessive force. I've read a number of complaints when viewing these cases. Officers, instead of just saying, you know, sit down, pushing you on the ground, pushing you hard in the car. There's been also a lot of abusive language. I can't say what I've read on the air, but it seems like it's been really extreme in the cases that I've been reading, in some ways a great disrespect for community members.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Dr. Bridal Pearson, director of the Graduate Program in Human Services Administration at the University of Baltimore. He is the chair of the Civilian Review Board. He represents the Northern District. And also with Jill Carter, former state delegate, now director of Baltimore's Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement, which oversees the Civilian Review Board. Dr. Pearson, what do you and your colleagues do when you receive a complaint?
We are notified and sent cases. So if it's a new case, we would be voting on whether we should stay with the IAD investigation or require more information to make a more clarified decision based on the CRB. So essentially, we receive a new case, and we're looking to make a decision on a new case on whether we just are going to stay with what the IAD report suggests, or if we think we need more information and it's not clear, then we'll vote to say CRB. Once we get to the meeting, the
Civilian
Review Board meeting,
own meeting.
Yes, I'm sorry, with the public there and everything, then we are able to make that decision in a public way and not just make a decision, but kind of give our information, our feedback, our logic and reasoning on why we are making these decisions.
Director Carter, given the constraints of staffing that you described, the small staff you have, is most of the analysis of complaints that is done, either the complaints that come directly to the Civilian Review Board or the complaints that are forwarded from the Internal Affairs Division, is that mostly analysis by the board members?
Well, the investigators conduct a full investigation. Again, there's two full-time investigators. And we also occasionally have volunteers, interns, and additional assistants. So, but the mainstays are the two full-time investigators. Based on their investigations, they provide that information to the board to make those analyses and make the determinations. Now, after the board reviews the file sent from the investigator, the board then can make a decision as to whether or not an allegation is sustained, not sustained, unfounded. Should an allegation be sustained by the board, they then make a recommendation to the police commissioner as to discipline. And so this becomes, again, a very complicated process. But upon that recommendation, the commissioner can either adhere to the Civilian Review Board's recommendation, reject the Civilian Review Board's decision, and then if there's a conflict between the two, the commissioner and the Civilian Review Board, it's then sent to a retired judge currently that's ostensibly an independent party that makes a review of each decision and comes to a conclusion as to which one is correct. And so this is a relatively new process. It had only begun last year that the board was actually making disciplinary recommendations, but now we're in the process of trying to make sure that our recommendations have credibility and legitimacy and that we can back them up so that they are adhered to by the commissioner.
Because the historic pattern has been that that previous commissioners have very seldom actually followed the advice of the Civilian Review Board.
Exactly. Right? Well, the prior Civilian Review Boards didn't even go as far as disciplinary recommendations like, we determine the officer should be suspended for 30 days, we determine the officer should be terminated. They didn't go that far. It's only been a recent thing. But what was not adhered to was just simply a sustained finding. Never in the history prior to this year where there have been two reversals of the police department's initial decision after receiving the decision of the Civilian Review Board. There had never in previous times ever been that type of a changing of the mind.
Dr. Pearson, how often are the complaints that the review board receives, how often do they come with identifying information about the officers and the individuals involved? How complete are these complaints?
The complaints that we receive and the information we see from the IED and the Civilian Review Board are pretty thorough, but can I make a point about what you were just talking about, what Director Carter was just making?
Of course.
I think that there are a number of things that I think we have great potential on this board, but there are a number of issues that I think we have that kind of tie our hands, and not because of the board itself, because of policies or statutes. For example, when making a disciplinary recommendation on a police officer after we have sustained a case, we use the police officer's disciplinary matrix. But the problem with that is that, and I've learned this from the sheriff, one of our board members, former sheriff, that we can't really make an accurate decision in some ways because we don't have access to police files. We don't have access to know if this is their first offense, second offense, or third offense. And the matrix is kind of based on whether you know that, because obviously the more offenses, the more severe the penalty would be for the disciplinary recommendation. And so our hands are tied in that way. Also with subpoena power, we have subpoena power on the officers that are witnesses to a particular incident. We have subpoena power also for witnesses in the community, but we don't have subpoena power for the actual subject officer. And so that limits the quality of information that we can provide, again, to make informed decisions. And I think one more part, there's other areas, but I'll stop here. The judge that makes a decision, once there's a dispute between the IAD report and the CRB report investigation, and we have one person who may be associated with the police department making this decision, where there can be some type of implicit bias that he's not even conscious about or she's not even conscious about. So I believe that that limits transparency. And I think it's very important to have, often in different types of organizations and systems, you have an interdisciplinary team that's making a decision that's so important like that and deliberate it appropriately, and not just by one person saying this is right or this is wrong.
Lots to think about there. We need to take a quick break here on the record. I'm Sheila Cass. When we come back, I want to pursue, Director Carter, what you said about being on the cusp of change and also talk about the goals of the Civilian Review Board. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. A year ago, the Department of Justice released a report on the Baltimore Police Department. One of the criticisms leveled against the Baltimore Police Department was that it lacked adequate civilian oversight. Quote, "The board's role has been diminished by severely limited investigative resources, inconsistent complaint referrals from BPD, and the city's failure to fill the board's seats," close quote. I'm here with Jill Carter, former state delegate, now director of Baltimore's Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement, which oversees the Civilian Review Board, and with Dr. Bridal Pearson, chair of the Civilian Review Board. He represents the Northern District. Jill Carter, you became director when Mayor Pugh took office in January. Do you think things have changed?
Oh, they've absolutely changed. As I alluded to earlier, the board is now making more substantial recommendations, and at least two have been adhered to by the police department. In addition to that, there have been ongoing systemic traditional problems of lack of cooperation. At this time, I can honestly say there is a greater spirit of cooperation. We're receiving all of the complaints we should be receiving. And I know that because we have like a monthly matchup with IAD to check our complaints against each other.
And so, that was not true for a long time.
Oh, no, it was not true at all. And we're also moving in a direction that I'm very pleased about. And this is something that this board has advocated for, which is our investigators having access to complete IAD files. And what I mean by that is, until now, our investigators have to request that BPD agents hand over information for them to investigate, and then they choose what is relevant and what is not relevant. But we've recently gotten a tacit approval for our investigators to be able to have full access, and we're moving in that direction of possibly maybe being even able to share the same technological engine where our investigators are able to have the same access as IAD to the files.
Bridal Pearson, Director Carter said a few minutes ago that she feels as if the Civilian Review Board is on the cusp of change. You laid out some elements that you think should be changed. Are you confident they will be in the consent decree process?
I'm somewhat confident. I think that it is an opportune moment to present this information, manage up, cultivate these relationships to make these things happen. I think we have great potential here, and I'm excited about that. And I'm also excited about my role, my new role as chair. I really am interested in furthering and cultivating Director Carter's vision, and I'm really looking to enhance the public awareness as far as what our purpose is, and also public trust. And we began some of those things already. When the public comes to the meetings, we give them more information. We want them to feel empowered about the process, and just small steps towards that. We've been talking about disseminating more information and using our partners to do so. So I'm really excited about this opportunity.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast speaking with Dr. Bridal Pearson, director of the Graduate Program in Human Services Administration at the University of Baltimore. He's chair of the Civilian Review Board. And with Jill Carter, former state delegate, now director of Baltimore's Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement, which oversees the Civilian Review Board. How many complaints are you dealing with on the Civilian Review Board?
So it does vary, and I think that the number is likely to be in flux, but I would say that when I came in the prior year, 2016, there had been just under 200 complaints that the board had ruled upon, had made decisions about one way or another. And now we are looking at a slight increase in that number of complaints because of the greater cooperation and I think also the growing awareness.
Do you feel that there is greater public trust in this process?
I think it's growing because the public has been coming to the meetings and we've been told that in the past that had not been the case. And each time I think it's growing more and more. And we're very participatory with the public. We allow them to have input into the processes of the board, and I think that goes a long way with them. But I think also they are our greatest allies along with the Civilian Oversight Task Force to help advocate for the changes that are needed to move us really from a back-end board, which means that we deal with allegations of misconduct at a very back-end stage, and then we make final kind of ultimate decisions at the end of that process, but we do very little to no decision-making to prevent these kinds of things, you know, to have input prior to that process.
How long does someone have to file a complaint directly with the Civilian Review Board?
as of July 1, 1 year. Prior to that, it was 90 days. The legislature changed the law, thank goodness, because we had a lot of cases that were time-barred.
Time-barred.
They had been filed after 90 days.
After 90 days.
Prior law was 90-day statute.
And when you receive a complaint, is there a deadline for you to rule on it?
We have an internal desire to get it done within 1 year, and so 1 year is the goal. But, of course, if we can do it quicker, we want to do it faster than that, if it's at all possible. Because of the volume and the limited number of investigators, though, it rarely happens that it happens too much in advance of that. And, in fact, when I came into the office, we had an extreme backlog. And then also, it took a while to get this incredible activist board up. They've only been in place since June. So we do have somewhat of a backlog. And so we're hoping to work that out. But the goal is, of course, a year.
So if you are receiving more complaints, are you going to need more resources?
Yes. My greatest desire is that this consent decree and this civilian oversight task force, when they take a look at us, if they are awake, alive, and not blind, they will see the need for greater resources. And I think that it's almost a foregone conclusion that will be advocated for. And since it comes under this umbrella of this DOJ consent decree, I think there's a stronger likelihood for it to happen than possibly in the past there was.
Ultimately, the cost of the process will be borne by the public in some way. Dr. Pearson, do you think that the public wants to invest more money in this process?
I believe so, and I think we have to define the public. I think those who are being impacted by the police practices that were discussed in the report, yes, absolutely. To be honest, people who aren't impacted by those things, I don't know what they think. I don't know how invested they would be because they're not impacted by it. But I would like to believe that most human beings want people to be treated fair and with equity.
Just on that, though, the consent decree doesn't actually call for any real money to go into increased civilian oversight. The money goes into a lot of the resources to fix what's wrong with IAD and to bring them up to speed and to improve their technology and other things, their ability to police. But there isn't actually a specific monetary designation for greater civilian oversight. But I do believe that that's something that's still open. And I think the Civilian Oversight Task Force and the incoming monitor are likely to be able to help us to make that case.
One last thing, Director Carter, before I let you go. I want to ask you about the narrowing down of the teams of applicants who've applied to oversee the implementation of the reforms required by the consent decree, the monitor. Four teams are still in the running: CNA Consulting, Exeger, Powers Consulting Group, and Venable. The city, the police department, and the Justice Department will soon submit their recommendations to the court. What are you hearing from residents about what they want from the monitor?
So interesting. We're just coming off of the public forums, and so honestly, what I got out of it is that even the most engaged members of the public are a little bit confused about the process and really what the role of a monitor is. But I think that people are making it very clear that the biggest issue continues to be trust and accountability, and transparency goes hand in hand with that. And so they're looking for the monitor to be one that they trust. And so I would just offer that at least two of the groups are very experienced in monitoring, and they go around, and many of their members are currently involved in monitoring like two or three different monitoring consent decrees across the country. The Powers Group is a local group that does not have that monitoring experience but has a great deal of public trust here. And then Venable Group is a mixed bag of local and non-local. And so the choice, I think, will come down to, does the public want local that they may know or have feel like they have more buy-in with, or do they want that experienced group that, you know, kind of does this for a living, this corporate group that goes around doing it and has some successes and some maybe not always successful, but at least they could have learned from their experiences. I think that's what it's going to come down to. But ultimately, the judge decides. The public has input, but the judge makes that final decision.
And do we know when that will be?
Well, the recommendations are to be submitted to the judge by August 25th, and the public comments are acceptable until August 23rd to submit their comments and recommendations to the DOJ website.
Okay, so it's moving right along. I'm very grateful to you both. You've given us a lot to think about, the Civilian Review Board. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jill Carter is director of Baltimore's Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement. She served for 14 years in the Maryland General Assembly representing Baltimore's 41st District. Dr. Bridal Pearson is director of the Graduate Program in Human Services Administration at the University of Baltimore. He's chair of the Civilian Review Board and represents the Northern District. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we'll link to the Civilian Review Board's page where you can find information about how to file a complaint and about the board's meetings. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.